Good day, everyone, and welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange conference call. Today's call is being recorded. Now, for opening remarks and introductions, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Joseph Lamb. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Jessica, and welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is HTTP Session Management Basics and PD Part 1. Today's presenter is Rama Bogarabu. Rama joined the WebSphere Application Server Level 2 support team in April 2002. He is responsible for solving customer issues with various components. He is specialized in web container, section management, data replication services, and dynamic cache components. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Rama.
Hello, welcome everyone. This is Rama Bogarabu. Today I'll be covering the part 1 of HTTP session management. I have split this presentation into two parts for more convenience. If you go to slide number 2, here's the agenda in today's presentation. I'll cover about HTTP session management basics and configuring session management in WebSphere. I will go through the database persistence, basically the memory-to-memory replication I have scheduled it for the next part. And I'll cover about role of web server plugin in session management. And I'll cover about session tuning settings and provide some resources and references, and at the end, I can answer any of your questions. If you go to slide number 3, the hypertext transfer protocol, that is HTTP, is by design a stateless protocol. To build effective web applications, it is very imperative that requests from a particular client or particular browser be associated with each other. Many strategies for session tracking have evolved over time, but all are difficult are troublesome for programmer to use directly. The servlet specification defines a simple HTTP session interface that allows a servlet container to use any of several approaches to track user session without involving application developer. So if you go to slide number 4, here I have listed few things about from the servlet API. In servlet API, the two main things for HTTP session management are contained in HTTP servlet request and HTTP session interfaces. HTTP servlet API contains all detailed information on available functionality, but what I have listed here are few important things. So, in order to create a session, application developer will call request.getSession with a Boolean attribute. Depending on the value for the attribute true or false, session manager will create a session or will associate an existing session and return to the user. If true is false, session manager will check for an existing sessions. It will assign if there is one already existent. If not, it will create a new session and send it back. If false is passed, then a session manager will try to check for an existing session and return to the application. And null will be returned if there is no associated session. There is another convenient method, getSession, without any argument. This basically implies true value. Once a session is created, or once a session object is returned to the application, an application developer can call session.isNew method to find out whether it is a newly created session or an existing session that was returned. And once a session is returned, from the application point of view, you can add or remove attributes by calling one of these methods, get attribute, set attribute, and remove attribute. And there are some convenience methods, and also there is a method that you can call to change the last access time or to change the maximum inactive interval. And these are the methods that I have listed here. Get creation time will return the time at which the session was created. Get last access time, it will return the time at which the session was last accessed. Get max inactive interval, it will return the current inactivity timeout. Set max inactive interval, with this method call, you can actually set a value specifying how long the session should be valid in the WebSphere web container. In addition to this, one another important one that I am missing in this slide is invalidate. When application developer calls session.invalidate, the session will get invalidated immediately. If you move on to slide number 5, here, I have listed a few methods that are useful when your application wants to listen to the session changes. The first one is HTTP session listener. The two convenient methods in here are session created and session destroyed. So these two methods will be invoked when a new session is created or when the existing session is destroyed. A session will be destroyed when you stop a web application or when you explicitly invalidate the session. And if you want to listen to the attributes, the application can implement HTTP session attribute listener, and the listeners will be invoked whenever attributes are added, removed, or replaced. And there is one another interface known as HTTP session activation listener. Activation listeners will be invoked when the session manager serializes the session data for making it persistent. Basically, session manager will perform serialization or deserialization when the session needs to be replicated from one JVM to a different JVM or from an existing JVM to the database for DB persistence. Session binding events. An object that is bound to a session can also implement HTTP session binding listener, and once that object implements the session HTTP session binding listener, value bound and value unbound will be invoked on those objects whenever a particular object is bound to a session or unbound from the session. If you move on to slide number 6, here is a sample of web.xml that contains the listener class. If your application is having any listeners like the HTTP session listener or HTTP session attribute listener, those listener classes should be declared in web.xml so that session manager will know these listener objects need to be notified on such events. If you move on to slide number 7, session management in WebSphere. In next few slides, I'll talk about the various configurations that you can do in WebSphere session manager. If you please move on to slide number 8. So, session management in WebSphere can be configured at various levels. There are mainly three levels that you can configure session management. Number 1, server level. In order to go to the server level settings, from the administrative console, you can select the application server, and underneath the web container, you can find session management settings. Number 2, enterprise application level. Once you have an application installed into the WebSphere application server, you can go into the enterprise applications and select the enterprise application, and there you'll find an option to configure session management at enterprise application level. And number 3, it is web application level. For changing the session settings at the web application level, you need to go into the admin console, click on the enterprise applications, select the enterprise applications where the web application is, and go to web modules, select the web application, then there will be an option to change the session settings at web application level. In next few slides, I will give you a screenshot of server level and application level settings. And also, you may note that session timeout may be overridden in web application using session API. So session.setMaxNactInterval, if your developer calls that one, then programmatically the session timeout can be varied from the application point of view. If you move on to slide number 9, here is a screenshot. I don't know, it might not be so clear because of resolution, but in next few slides I will give detailed information about all these settings. Basically, you click on Enterprise Application Servers, select your server, then you will be able to go into Session Management. These are the various settings that you can do at the Session Management, like change the session tracking mechanism. You can specify how many sessions should stay in memory, the max in memory session count. There is an option that goes allow overflow, and you can alter the timeout, and you can choose some options for security integration as well as allow serialized access. And in the same page, there is also a link for distributed environment settings, where if you click on the link, you'll be able to change session distributed settings anywhere from none to database or memory to memory persistence. If you move on to slide number 10, if you click on the cookie name in the earlier page, you will be presented with this page where you can change some cookie settings. By default, the cookie name that WebSphere will use for the session information tracking is JSessionID, as per the servlet spec. But for convenience, there is an option to rename the cookie to a different name. In my troubleshooting section in part 2, I will tell you what cases you need to rename the cookie. And along with the cookie renaming, there are other things that you can configure, like setting a cookie domain, cookie path, and cookie maximum age. By default, the cookie will be valid only for the current client browser session at the client. If you move on to slide number 11, here I have shown a screenshot of application level settings. One important thing at application level is there is one option there you can see where I have highlighted in a red box, which is override session management. By default, this will be unchecked. When this is unchecked, all the values that you specify in this page are not valid. In order to override the session settings at application level, let it be enterprise application or web application, when you go into this proper panel, you need to make sure you check this override session management. If you don't have this checked, then all the settings here will have no meaning. If you move to slide number 12, here I'll go through all the various settings that you have seen in the server level or application level. Number one, session tracking mechanisms in WebSphere. As defined in the server specification, you can configure WebSphere Session Manager to use any of the following tracking mechanisms: cookies, URL rewriting, SSL ID tracking. So by default, cookies will be selected. In order to track a user session, WebSphere will send a JSession ID cookie to the browser, and from then on, browser will send the cookie information for all subsequent requests. With URL rewriting, the JSession ID will be encoded within the URL, and when user clicks in the URL, the session ID information will be sent to the server. And the third one is SSL ID tracking. If you are having secured web server, an SSL ID will be flown from browser to the web server. The SSL ID tracking is pretty proven, and that is a very unique way of identifying a client that is accessing your application. So you can tell WebSphere to use that SSL ID to track the session instead of using an additional cookie, which is a JSession ID. And the next setting is maximum in-memory session count. This tells how many sessions will stay active in memory. If the maximum in-memory session count is too high, then it might fill up your JVM heap. So you need to make sure you give a proper value for maximum in-memory session count. This is a tunable setting. Also, there comes an additional option with maximum in-memory count, that is allow overflow. Allow overflow is valid only if you are using in-memory sessions. If you are using database persistence or memory-to-memory persistence, allow overflow do not have any meaning because the memory contains only maximum in-memory session count number of sessions. It is recommended that you not select this allow overflow action, allow overflow attribute, because if you select this option, what will happen is if somebody sends malicious request to your server, they might end up creating huge number of sessions and filling up your memory and creating performance problems for your application. Session timeout. By default, session timeout in WebSphere is 30 minutes. If you want to change the session timeout, you can change here. Remember, all these settings can be varied at server level, application level, and web application level. The one in the web application level are the more granular, and they will have higher precedence when compared to the server level. Next one is security integration. You can select this option if session manager need to perform additional check to make sure the requests are coming in from the same browser. As you know, the JSession ID will be used to track the session. If somebody sends a malicious request by having the session ID from a different request, server will assume that it is coming from the old user. So in order to avoid those kind of problems, you can allow security integration, in which case session manager will perform additional check to make sure the session request is coming from the valid user for which the session was created. Serialized session access. You can select this option if you want to restrict only one thread to be accessing a session. If you are having a framed browser screen where n number of requests will go to the server, then assuming you have 5 frames and all 5 requests go to the server at the same time, all 5 servlets can access the session information concurrently. So if your application is having any threading issues when accessing the session data, then you can select this option, allow serialized access, to restrict only one thread to access the session data for that particular user. remember, when you select this option, you might hit some performance problems because you're telling session manager to wait sending session access for other threads. And along with allow serialized access, there are two other settings. Maximum wait time in seconds, this tell how long session manager should wait for a request that is trying to access a session object. And after the timeout has reached, what should it do, whether it should throw an exception or whether it should allow the session access. That can be selected by allow access on timeout setting. If you move on to slide number 13. In the session cookie settings, you can configure various things like cookie name. By default, it is JSessionID. You can change the cookie name if you're having some conflict with other applications running in the same domain. And you can select secure cookies, in which case the cookie information will be encrypted. Cookie domain. This tells what domain should be allowed or what cookies should be sent from browser to the server. Basically, assuming you are having like a user navigating across developerworks.ibm.com and alphaworks.ibm.com, by default, the cookie domain will be ibm.com. So cookies for both these applications will be the same. So you might end up in having some problems where the cookie will get overwritten from one server to the other server. In those situations, you might want to restrict the cookie domain. Cookie path. So by specifying cookie path, you can restrict cookie going to only certain applications installed in your server. Cookie maximum age. By default, cookie maximum age is browser session, but you can also configure a certain age for the cookie, in which case the cookie might survive even if the application user will close the browser and open a new browser. If you move on to slide number 14, here I have given some internals about JSessionID cookie. JSessionID contains the information that WebSphere will use to track a particular user, as well as plugin will use the JSessionID cookie to maintain session affinity as well as to perform some load balancing. And JSessionID, if you see, it contains various information in addition to the session ID. The first four characters is known as cache ID. Next 23 subsequent characters is known as the session ID. And after that, there will be a colon, which will be a clone ID separator. And you can find one or more clone IDs, or even there might be a minus one, in which case there is no clustering. So plugin will use this clone ID information to maintain affinity, and session manager will use the cache ID information to understand whatever copy that it has in its memory is same as in the persistent store, or it should load a new copy from the persistent store like database or memory-to-memory replication. And when you are having any session problems and contacting support after getting some session traces, it is very important to note down the JSessionID information for which the failure occurred so that support team can narrow down the problem fairly quickly looking into the trace for that particular session ID. If you move on to slide number 15, in distributed environment settings, by default, it will be none. You can configure for database persistence or memory-to-memory replication. I will go through each one of those. If you select none as the replication, then session data will be stored only in the application server JVM. So if the server gets killed or if the server crashes, then all the session data will be lost. Also, when you stop a web application, then the sessions will get invalidated. And when the user request fails over from one server to another server in a cluster configuration, then data will be lost when the user request goes to a different cluster member because there is no way to replicate the data to the other server. And with none, if you select allow overflow option, then session manager will create a huge number of sessions. And if you disable allow overflow, then you are allowed to create only sessions that are limited by max in-memory session count. And next setting is database persistence. In order to use this database persistence, you need to have a relational database product for database persistence like Oracle or DB2. Session data will be stored into the database whenever you create a session, and you can alter the session tuning in the custom tuning settings that I will cover in next few slides. And for the session data to get stored into the database, all session data must implement java.io.serializable interface. If session data do not implement java.io.serializable interface, then those session data cannot be stored into the database. All serializable session data can resist an application server crash or a JVM recycle. If number of session exceeds maximum in-memory session count, then least used sessions in memory will be passivated. And next setting is memory-to-memory replication. If you want to use memory-to-memory replication, there is no need to have additional relational database products because WebSphere will act as a storage for the session data. Session information is stored into the different application server JVM. Session data that do not implement java.io.serializable interface cannot be replicated, similar to DB persistence. All serializable session data can resist application server crash or a recycle. If number of sessions exceeds maximum in-memory session count, then least used session from the memory will be passivated. And also, one another important thing is memory-to-memory replication is available from network deployment configuration onwards. So if you are using WebSphere application server base edition or express edition, you will not have this memory-to-memory replication option. If you move on to slide number 16, in next few slides, I will talk about database persistence. If you move on to slide number 17, in order to configure database persistence, first of all, you need to create a connection pool for the database where you want to configure Session Manager. Once you create a connection pool, you can specify the JNDI name of the database connection pool that you created for in the session management page. So Session Manager will create all the needed schema for the session database on server recycle. On the same page where you configure database persistence, you can configure a few things like page size, especially this will be used for DB2, and also you can configure the table space name. And you can also specify if you want to use multi-row schema. By default, all the session data will be stored into a single record into the database. So amount of session data is limited by how much ever the record can grow. Assuming 4 MB is the limit, so you cannot store session data of more than 4 MB. If you are having 10 attributes, then all the attributes combined together should not exceed 4 megabytes. But with multi-row schema, what you can do is each attribute can go up to 4 megabytes. So what will happen is if you are having 10 attributes, each attribute will be stored into a different database record, allowing you to store more data into the database. Remember, it is always recommended to store minimum amount of data into the session. The data that you store into the session should only be used for the tracking purpose, but not all the transactional data. This will cause adverse effects because assuming you are storing like 5 MB of data for each user and assuming your website have a turnout of 1,000 concurrent users, then eventually you will fill up the heap, causing memory problems. So it is always recommended that you keep only tracking information in session rather than storing huge amount of data. If you are using DB2 on ZOS, then Session Manager will not be able to create the schema needed. You need to create the session schema manually. Maybe your database administrator can do that one, but all the instructions and about schema is available on the 601 version of the Info Center, or version 5 of the Info Center for version 5 product. If you move on to slide number 18, this is a page where you can configure database settings. As you can see, here you can specify the JNDI name of the database resource and user ID and password. You can specify row size, and you can also specify a tablespace name. If you want to session manager to use only a particular tablespace instead of the default one, And if you check that use multi-row schema option, then session manager will use multi-row schema. If you move on to slide number 19, here are some highlights about database persistence. This feature is available in Express as well as base editions, whereas memory-to-memory replication is available for network deployment or higher configuration. And you need an external relational database product like DB2 or Oracle. Session objects implementing HTTP session activation listener are invoked for all activations and passivations. Basically, when the data is serialized or deserialized, this activation listeners will get invoked. When the session memory cache is full, then old data is removed from the memory cache. When multi-row schema is in use, then each session object is stored in a separate database row. If you move on to slide number 20, role of web server plugin. Plugin has a very good role in maintaining the session affinity. Session manager will take care of ensuring the session data is intact in memory as well as in database as needed as per your settings. But plugin is the one that will decide where the request from the client should go to which server. Assuming you are having a cluster of two servers, all the requests from the same client should be maintained to the same server that is known as affinity. Okay, so I'll go through some important points in the web server plugin. If you move on to slide number 21, so these are the main two important roles of web server plugin. One is load balancing. So if you are having a cluster of application servers with n number of members, then plugin will do the load balancing based on your algorithm setting. By default, it will be round-robin algorithm. For all new requests, plugin will perform the load balancing. Next important thing is session affinity. For all existing requests or for all existing client requests, the affinity will be maintained to the same server. For all existing sessions, plugin sends requests to the server where the session data exists in memory. When the target server is not reachable, then request fails over to a different server in the cluster. Plugin will use the clone ID information present in the JSession ID cookie of the incoming request to route request to a specific application server. If you move on to slide number 22, here I have listed a sample of plugin config.xml. Here, if you notice, I have a cluster, and the cluster has two cluster members, and each cluster member have a clone ID. The first one, if you notice, it is VJ1FJDVT, and the name of the cluster member is server C1, and it is on node Rama2 Node 01. And if you see the next cluster member, the name of the cluster member is server C2, and its clone ID is BF15JE1C. So when there is an incoming request containing a JSession ID cookie, the web server plugin will parse the clone information and it will try to match one of these clone IDs and it will try to send the request to the server where it finds a match to the clone ID. If it fails to find a match to the clone ID, then it will route the request to next available server as per the round robin load balancing. That is what you use in this particular sample of plugin-cfg.xml. If you move on to slide number 23, here I have shown you a simple topology using database persistence. Here, if you notice, web server is connecting to up two application servers, as you have seen in the plugin configuration file, server C1 and server C2, and each of these servers have a clone ID, and both of these servers pointing to same database for session persistence. Assuming there is any JSession ID cookie in the incoming request, plugin will try to match the particular clone ID to the server, and if that particular server is alive, then plugin will route the request to the server. So in this case, plugin will route the request to server C1. If you move on to slide number 24, here I have given a simple failover case. User sends a new request, and plugin will choose to send the request to server C1. Application running in server C1 calls request.getSession with true as an argument. Session manager will create a new session because there is no JSession ID in the incoming request. one session manager will create a new session ID. It will create JSession ID cookie, and it will put some cache ID in front of it, and it will put some clone ID. Basically, the server C1's clone ID will be added to the JSession ID cookie. So after the response is sent back to the client, assume that server C1 crashes and user sends a new request. Then plugin checks for the JSession ID cookie in the incoming request, and it founds clone ID of server C1 and tries to send request to server C1. Plugin will be unable to open a connection to server C1, and plugin realizes that server C1 is unreachable and it has crashed, and it picks server C2. So request will be sent to server C2, and if the application calls request.getSession, then the session manager will find a cookie in the incoming request. With that cookie, it will not find any data in its memory, so it will go to the database and load the session data. And once it loads the session data, it updates the cache ID of the session object and increments the cache ID in the JSession ID cookie. And in addition to incrementing the cache ID, it will also add the clone ID information for server C2. And a new JSession ID will be sent back to the client. So on subsequent request, plugin will try to route to one of these two servers where the session data exists. Assuming server C1 is down, request will keep on going to server C2. If you move on to slide number 25, here I have listed some session tuning. In session tuning, there are three important things. One is write frequency. Assuming you are having database persistence, how frequent the data in memory should be updated to the database. You can configure as end of servlet service or manual update or time-based writes. If you configure for end of servlet service, then after the end of service call, session manager, before finalizing the request, it will store all the data into the database. Manual update. If you choose to have manual update, then session data will be stored only on a call to the sync method on the session data or the session object. And you can also configure for time-based writes. This will eliminate overhead of storing the session information into the memory outside of the request processing thread. So a background thread will run as per the time interval that you have in time-based setting, and based on the settings, all the changes will get written or will get updated into the database. And here, write contents. You can tell session manager if it should update only the changed attributes or whether it should update all the attributes in memory to the database. You can select one of these two things. You need to be very careful when you are having only updated session attributes. The reason, because assuming your application calls session.setAttribute, once the attribute is set, then it will be treated as a dirty, and depending on the write frequency, the data will be stored into the memory. On next request, if application calls request.getSession and gets the session data, or session.getAttribute and gets the attribute, and it modifies the object references by calling object methods. And assuming the application won't call session.setAttribute at the end of the service, then what will happen, session manager will treat that attribute as a unchanged attribute even though the application changed its references. So the data will not get updated into the database. And if the server goes down for some reason, or if the request fails over to the new server, then whatever is there in the database, it is a old copy. So you need to be very careful when you are choosing write contents. From application point of view, you need to make sure you're calling set attribute appropriately. Scheduled session cleanup. By default, a background thread will run, will perform invalidations, and when a session will get invalidated, it will delete the database row. So there is an additional overhead of going into the database and deleting a record from the database. With scheduled cleanup, you can eliminate that overhead of going to the database and removing the database whenever the invalidation thread runs, but all the data will stay intact in memory until the scheduled invalidation time occurs. You can configure two different time periods at which the session cleanup should happen for the database. So these are the main three settings that you can configure. And if you go to custom settings, you can choose whatever you want, but there are also some predefined settings like very high optimized for performance and high, which will have some performance and other factors, medium and low, which is optimized for failover. So very high setting will have a write frequency of time 300 seconds and write content only updated attributes, and scheduled session cleanup is true. And with high setting, it is not scheduled cleanup, but write frequency is time-based write to 300 seconds, and write content is all session attributes. With medium, the settings are write frequency is end of servlet cycle, and write contents are only updated attributes, and it is not scheduled cleanup. And low is optimized for failover, so write frequency is end of servlet service, write content is all session attributes. And in custom settings, you can configure whatever you want. So if you are running into any problems with session data loss, it is very important that you come to this page and verify what kind of settings you are having. If you move on to slide number 26, here I have given some additional resources. And this concludes part one of the presentation. In part two, I will be covering memory-to-memory replication as well as some common PD steps as well as some important trace points in the session. Here I have listed some additional resources. One important thing is WebSphere Application Server Information Center. And there is a link for the best practices for using HTTP sessions. And of course, you can always refer to the servlet specification because session manager is supposed to work as per the servlet specification. So these three are the very good references if you are running into any kind of session-related issues. And if you move to slide number 27, this chart includes links to number of sites that provide valuable online resources for WebSphere products. Developer Works offers in-depth technical information. The events link on support page points you to webcast and conference information. Visit WebSphere.org for user group information and more product information. The IBM Education Assistant consists of self-help modules to get new users up to learning curve quickly. The ESR tool is for Passport Advantage customers to open, update, and view PMRs online. And the My Support link on all product support pages lets you sign up for weekly email updates for products that are of interest for you. That concludes this presentation, and if you move on to slide number 28, if you are having any questions and answers, I will be able to answer them at this time.
Thank you, Rama, for a great presentation. At this point, Jessica, we would like to open the lines for questions.
Ranjan Mohajapatra with Altel has our first question.
Hey, thanks, Rama. Good presentation. I have a question. Let's see. I have three servers in backend, which are portal servers, and I have three HTTP servers, which are load balanced, and this now it is not session persistent. So what happened is when the user is logging into portal 1, and that portal server crash or some stopped or something like that, the user lost his session and usually do a new login to go to another server. So my question is, when we are going to use these techniques and we are going to store the session ID, JSession ID and cookie, does it take those things and go to different server, a different instance of portal server?
Yeah, now with your settings, since you don't have a database persistence or memory to replication enabled, plug in on each one of your web server. If it gets the request, it will route to the next existing server. But all the session data will be lost, and WebSphere will create a new session ID. And if your login is associated to the session, then user might be prompted with a login screen. So in order to overcome this problem, you might want to choose one of the persistent mechanisms like database, which I covered today, and our memory-to-memory replication, which I'll be covering in Thursday's session.
Okay, and for that, we need a separate database where JSSN ID has to be stored, right?
For database persistence, yes, you need to have a database where session information will be stored. But if you want to configure memory-to-memory replication, you don't need any database. You can do that with few clicks in the application server.
Oh, cool. Okay. Yeah. Thanks for your answer. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Our next question comes from Herman Hubler with IBM.
Hello, thanks for the presentation. I just have a short question. If you're using SSL ID for a session tracking mechanism, I'm just wondering if the SSL ID is part of the HTTP header, because if SSL is terminated on the web server, how does the servlet engine know about the SSL ID?
That is a good question, yes. The drawback of that one is if the web server dies or if the SSL ID changed, then session manager will not be able to recognize the particular session where the user is associated. So that's one drawback of using SSL ID, where it is not resistant to the web server recycle or change of SSL ID.
And the SSL ID is part of the HTTP header field?
SSL ID?
Yeah.
Yes.
How does the session manager know the SSL ID of the request?
Right. Session manager will know the SSL ID of the request and the SSL ID.
Yeah, how does he know this? How does he know the SSL ID? Is it part of the HTTP header, the SSL ID?
Right. Web server will also include the SSL ID in the request to the application server, but because the SSL ID will also flow as a cookie.
Okay, so the SSL ID flows as a cookie from the web server to the servlet engine.
Servlet engine. And session manager internally will maintain a table that maps SSL ID to a JSession ID.
Okay, thank you very much.
No problem.
Our next question comes from Peter Larson with Svenska Handelsbank.
Yes, hello. Thank you for a very good presentation. I have a question regarding the session tuning settings.
Okay.
Yeah, you said that you should be careful if you use only updated attributes.
That is correct.
Yeah. I wonder, if you don't do a set attribute when you're returning from the servlet, isn't the objects that you have been changing, isn't that those objects lost anyway when you get in the next call? I don't really understand why, in which situation you actually could use an object even though you haven't done a set attribute.
Okay, let me explain you. Assuming in your session, shopping cart is an attribute, okay?
Yeah.
When initial request comes in, session manager will create the session, and when user adds an object to a shopping cart, then your application will create a shopping cart object, and it will add items to the shopping cart object, and it will call session.set attribute shopping cart and pass the actual object, right?
Yeah.
Now, the shopping cart will be stored into the database, okay?
Yeah.
Assume that user navigates and adds more items to the shopping cart, and request goes to the server, and in the server, the servlet calls request.get attribute shopping cart, then shopping cart will be returned, and for the shopping cart object, your application calls shopping cart.add item, or it will modify item, it will do any sort of things. Now, the state of the shopping cart is changed, okay?
Yeah.
But the application have not called session.set attribute shopping cart.
Yeah.
Okay? In that case, what will happen, as long as the user request comes to the same server, since all the JVM references, the server will find the new shopping cart, okay? It will have all the updated information. Even though user has not called session.set attribute, he has got the same object and he has been modifying the same object. So all the references will be intact, and as long as the request goes to the same server, he will get all the new data. Assuming this server crashes and request fails over to a different server. So in the different server, when it loads from the database, it has only the initial version of the shopping cart, because application never called session.set attribute, even though it keep on changing the shopping cart.
Yeah.
In those situations, you will lose some data, because in session tuning, you selected only updated attributes. The only way that session manager will know the attribute is changed is if you call session.set attribute, but not if you just change the references.
Yeah, but I didn't know that that objects that you created within the scope of calling a servlet actually was still there in JVM when you were returning for the next call, because won't they go out of scope when you're returning from the first servlet call?
They will go out of... sorry to interrupt you. Actually, they will go out of the scope of the current thread or the current request, but they will be within the scope of the session object. So those objects will be active as long as session is active.
Okay.
Okay?
So they are reachable for the application. Okay. Okay.
Right, for the subsequent request from the same client.
Okay. Okay. Thank you for the answer.
Mm-hmm. No problem.
Our next question comes from David Egan with One Beacon Insurance.
Yes, very good session, by the way. My question was on the simple failover case. How does the plugin determine which clone to send it to next if you had random, set it as random? Is it just randomly picking servers?
That's a good question. By default, plugin will try to go to the first clone ID. So JSession ID cookie will contain one or more clone IDs. Assuming in our example, we have two clone IDs. Let me tell you the slide number so that you can go to that particular slide. Say, if you go to slide number 14, in this slide, you have two clone IDs, right? So if the request comes in, then plugin will try to route the request to the first clone ID, which is VF15JDBT. If that server is marked down or unreachable, then plugin will route the request to the next clone ID, which is VF15JENC. Okay? And this is the default behavior. So first server, it goes to the first server, and from subsequent requests until the server 1 is available, it will go to the server 2. When server 1 becomes available, then it will again switch back to server 1. Right? There is one custom property available in the information center. Basically, the name of the custom property, if I remember correctly, is no affinity switchback. So if you configure that custom property, plugin will route the request to server 2 continuously, even though server 1 becomes available.
And that is just going in the order that they appear in the plugin then? If you have three or more?
You have three or more with that option, then plugin and session manager will work intelligently so that plugin will route the request to the most recently assigned server instead of the original server.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, no problem.
And there are no further questions. I'd like to turn the conference back over to our presenters for any additional or closing remarks.
At this time, we will conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. We hope you will join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on this site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Rama, for presenting today.
Thank you all.